Veterans Town Hall 2024, trying to raise awareness with the federal candidates, the presidential candidates, and the state office seekers. And a wonderful venue here, Bank of New Hampshire Stage Capital Center for the Arts. We thank Swim with the Mission, Outdoor Pride, and Laconia Harley-Davidson for our morning. Just taking a break from all the other news, all the divisive stuff. Yes, the president met with the leader of China. Yes, inflation is too high. Yes, things are divisive. Yes, there are two wars. But what keeps us free? Less than 1% serve, and even a smaller amount could even qualify to serve these days, mentally and physically, to get into the service. We have a crisis in America, but why can't we agree on freedom? And before we switch gears to our next presidential candidate, and also delighted that we have retired Army General Don Bolduc in the House, and Scott Brown, former U.S. Senator from Mass, but also ran in New Hampshire. But people don't know that Scott Brown has a lot of years, like the general, in the service of military. They're going to talk in a little bit about their stories. But right now, Jay Lucas on his way out, but just checking in on the first hour, these wonderful flags from Flags of Valor, wooden car flags, including the Israeli flag next to the American flag. Phil Taub, of course, one of our great sponsors. You had a real quick story about Jay, and then we're going to bring in Vivek. Yeah.
Just to help our listeners understand why Jay and I do what we do for veterans, just real quick. So Jay brought Children of the Fallen Patriots to New Hampshire, and their biggest issue is finding children of fallen heroes, because if they can find them, and you know one of your parents died in service, you can go to college for free.
Right.
So back in 2018, we put on a huge event at Newfound Lake, Swim with a Mission. We had about 5,000 people there, came to see the Navy SEALs swim across Newfound Lake, and I invited all the veteran service organizations in New Hampshire to be there. And in the middle of all the chaos, I walked over to see how they were doing, and I walked towards the Children of the Fallen Patriots table.
Yeah.
And I remember Dave Tilley was there, you know Dave very well. And I saw a young woman running from the table with tears in her eyes.
Oh.
And it really upset me. And I ran over there and I said to Dave Tilley and the volunteers from Children of Fallen Patriots, what just happened? What did you say to this woman? And they said, Phil, you don't understand. She came here to see the Navy SEALs. Her and her mother had to leave the base because the father was killed in Afghanistan. And so they moved back to New Hampshire. And they decided she was not going to go to college because they couldn't afford it. And mom was still struggling for work. She came to see the SEALs, and she walked up to this table to find out what Children of the Fallen Patriots does. And she had just found out that she was going to go to college for free, and she was running to go and tell her mother. And I promise you, that changed the life of that veteran family.
And thank you, Jay, for that. And, yes, and we just lost a night stalker this week, a 26-year-old night stalker in the U.S. Army from Gorham, New Hampshire, so thank you.
Well, and that's why we do what we do at Children of Fallen Patriots. It's really the story that Phil just told. And that has happened now. We are now over 2,000 families, 2,000 kids that we've helped put through
college. No red tape.
98 cents of every dollar that comes in, we put it right in. And that's really the motivating mission behind our involvement with Flags of Valor. It's really honoring our veterans and doing what we can to pass freedom on to this next generation of Americans.
Let's spread it. We're going to bring in Vivek Ramaswamy, one of the Republican presidential candidates, been on the show a lot, of course, and coming up, Governor Chris Sununu, before we bring in some members of the military right here. Vivek, thanks for being with us. Good morning, Hampshire, our Veterans Town Hall.
It's good to be on, Jack. It's an honor to be on, and I also spoke to Phil earlier about his efforts and want to congratulate him and everything they're doing as well. And thank you to all the veterans who are in the room. We appreciate it.
Well, you've had some thoughts on restructuring Washington. You've talked a lot about bureaucracy and red tape. How do we, this is the goal of this Veterans Town Hall, Vivek Ramaswamy, how do we make veterans issues more front and center? You know that debate you were just in before Veterans Day, a few nights before?
Yes.
I asked Governor DeSantis in the first hour, did the moderators ask one question in that presidential debate on veterans care or issues or mental health services or better support of veterans?
You know, it's funny, none of the three presidential debates has a question about veterans been asked. And so we've been going out of our way to be very specific about what we can do. A lot of talk is cheap. People will say we stand with veterans. That's great. What are we actually going to do? And I say this, Jack, at a time when we're suffering a crisis of national pride. Young people don't want to serve in the military. We have a 25% recruitment deficit because they're not dumb. They see how we treat veterans on the back end. That's why they don't want to serve on the front end. And so I think we have to revive that with action. So one of the things I've rolled out is just some very specific things we're going to be able to do. Let's talk about just even while people are in service, how do you prevent PTSD or at least lower the incidence of it afterwards? basic decompression buffers for people who have come from active combat roles out before they're returning back to civilian life, basic elements of workforce training. Even when they do return to civilian life, one of the reasons that PTSD goes underreported is because people are afraid of being tagged with a red flag. Well, I think we need greater privacy restrictions so veterans actually feel free to report whether they've suffered from PTSD or not, as opposed to being afraid to report what they're actually suffering. We're talking about actual post-service as well. People who might have to drive 50, 60, 70, 80 miles, I'm not even sure if there's a proper full service. I don't think there is in the state of New Hampshire. You know, in central Ohio, people may have to drive 50, 60, 70 minutes as well. I think that you should be able to have access to community care as an option in addition to VA care, or extend that element of VA care. And I go further into treatment options as well. I mean, I think that a lot of the Schedule I substances, think about ketamine, ayahuasca, or otherwise, these are still better alternatives that veterans should be able to choose if they're suffering from PTSD, rather than turning to fentanyl or worse, to suicide. It's upwards of 40 per day now. And that's unconscionable. We're the United States of America. These are the people who have served this country to make the sacrifices needed so we can enjoy our freedoms here at home. We aren't a nation if we don't stand for them. And I think that these are very practical steps, Jack. This isn't right. just pie in the sky. I think practical steps that we can take to really stand for our veterans.
Vivek, it's Phil Taub, and great to talk to you again. I appreciate that you came to my home, and we talked a lot about veterans. And I love the fact that you're not a career politician. You know, you're a business person. And I love the idea of bringing sort of that business acumen to Washington. You know, is there things we could do to reduce the bureaucracy at the VA and make it operate more like a business than a government?
Well, yeah, one of the ideas that I'm actually weighing now, Phil, is think about the ownership model of the VA. I mean, I think that you could imagine thinking about actually running it like you would run a company where the veterans are like the shareholders of that company, okay? So if you think about it that way, then the people who are running the actual VA, they're not accountable to some bureaucratic chain that's insulated from political accountability. They're accountable directly to the veterans. Well, in a company, who elects the management team and the board? The stockholders do. So if we start to treat the veterans like the stockholders, the shareholders of the VA, that's the model that I come from in corporate America and the companies I've built, taking them public and otherwise, that's how it works. Why shouldn't veterans have that same right? And so if I ask one simple question, who is the VA accountable to? In the current bureaucracy, there's no clear answer to that question. Under my watch, there's going to be a clear answer to that question. They're accountable right. to the veterans they serve. And so, yes, I want to borrow some of those shareholder models from the private sector to actually allow for shareholder voting and selection and accountability of management. And the people who do a good job get paid more. The people who do a bad job get fired. I think that's what's actually going to restore accountability in our VA system. And it's a great question, and one that, you know, the good news is, as commander-in-chief, as somebody who comes in with actual experience as a CEO, this is high on my list to fix, and that's how I would do it.
Thank you for the time, one of the Republican presidential candidates, Vivek Ramaswamy. Thank you.
Thank you all for what you do. I appreciate it.
It is our Veterans Town Hall live, Bank of New Hampshire stage already. We've had several of the presidential candidates weighing in. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour, Governor Chris Christie will be here. We've had the candidates for governor checking in person. Kelly Ayotte here earlier, Chuck Morse earlier. Now we're going to bring in Governor of New Hampshire, Governor Chris Sununu. Governor, good morning. Thanks for supporting or being on our Veterans Town Hall. And I belated thank you for supporting our Caring and Sharing last week on the food drive. Thank you, Governor.
Oh, no. Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you. I mean, you're the one doing the work, getting the word out. It's, you know, it's one of those issues when you're talking about veterans and veteran services and organizations and what we have to do. We all kind of know it. Sometimes it sits in the back of somebody's head, but it's something that always has to be on your forefront. We're obviously, as you know, we're making a huge stride. We want to be the most veteran-friendly state in the country, and that right. means it's not just the services we provide. It's the job opportunities, the workforce opportunities, the general community support that comes with that, making sure all the nonprofits are working together. So there's a lot of pieces to that, but I tell you, and it's not just, I mean, you've been obviously a lead voice around veterans and veteran advocacy for years now on the radio. I mean, really the lead voice. But now getting all these other nonprofits involved and kind of attached, right? Not necessarily that one supersedes the other, but they're kind of holding hands, if you will, right? The left and the right hand know what's happening. And that way we become a place where veterans say, look, if I need something, I know where to go, right? It's not just a government-provided services, but the government's providing the doorway for the better services, the more accurate, the more target-focused services for whatever the need might be of the day.
Governor, it's Phil Taub. It's great to talk to you today. I'm going to actually ask Jack a question, Governor. I'm going to ask him this question. Jack, do you know who the best governor for veterans is anywhere in the United States?
I know a couple, maybe in Texas and Florida, would say that. But I think what you're doing in Franklin, New Hampshire, I think what we've done, and I actually know Governor Sununu has taken this very seriously. It's sincere, and I think the entrepreneurial aspect of which he's approached, for example, what's going to happen in Franklin, New Hampshire, I'm really excited. Veterans Count and some other groups, you've been a leader there. But I think we can even do more because the governor just hit upon it. There are so many wonderful veteran service groups in New Hampshire. They could be in Candia, could be in Guilford, could be in Nashua, and the veterans don't know they're there. You've tried to pull it together, but that's my I'm not a politician. It's a political answer.
Well, I'm just going to go back, and we'll give the microphone back to Governor Sununu. But even before Franklin, which Franklin is is unique, and we're going to lead the whole nation in what Governor Sununu is leading there. But even before that, during COVID, twice, Governor Sununu freed up federal money.
Four veterans. Yes,
and veteran service organizations, and saved dozens of veteran service organizations that would not have survived COVID.
Because they didn't have the donations coming.
That is correct.
Yeah, thank you, Governor. Governor, real quickly, you could comment on that, but real quickly. You know, I was able to get together in a few weeks, maybe a month planning, several presidential candidates, several statewide candidates. You're on. We have more to come. And I'm not talking about Trump or Biden. In fact, President Trump and the White House extended invites to Democrats. Everyone else taking part because we're talking about veterans. It's not divisive. It's actually unifying freedom. So I'll let you respond to Phil's comment before we let you go.
Well, look, we'll just say, look, I don't think any of us care or want to know what any of the political aspirations or political parties of any veteran is. It does not matter. It's about what they've done, their service, and what we have the obligation to give back. You know, the thing I'm going to harp on with the Franklin opportunity, you know, it's not just bringing all the nonprofits together. That's amazing. Providing homeless and housing services for veterans, huge top priority. Mental health services for veterans. Huge top priority. We're working with the feds, right? The biggest problem with veteran services in America is you have state programs on the left and you have the federal VA on the right. They don't really talk. The VA has their own issues. I have almost really no control. I get veteran service complaints all the time about the federal VA, and we have so little we can actually do to push levers at the state level. But now we're going to bring them in. We're inviting them. Hey, just have a location, because some things we can't do, and we'll walk them right over to the federal VA door, so they know what we're doing. We know what they're doing. Everyone has communication. So from a veteran, a customer standpoint, it should be seamless. That's what this is all about. How do we make it seamless? How do we make it seamless in terms of services? And as Phil Taub told me one day, we want to get to the point where when you walk off a plane in Manchester, New Hampshire, you know, as a veteran, you know the message is there. Welcome to the most veteran-friendly state in the country. Look, I have a personal interest. I 2 days ago, my wife and I, we said goodbye to our son. He enlisted in the Marines. He got on a plane to Paris Island.
I did not know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and so it's
wow.
Wow. I asked his recruiter as we were saying goodbye. I said, hey, explain me how insurance and all that works. He goes, oh, no, he's part of TRICARE now. And I went, uh-oh, you know, because TRICARE has its problems, right, and all that sort of thing. But what can we do on our end to make sure that I'm not just here to bash on the federal side? You know, the state never works perfectly either. But what do we do to make sure that as a continuity of service, we are all right there making sure that it's easy for the veteran? They've gone through hell and back, so many of them. The least we can do is make a process of service and access to those services as seamless as possible. So I think, look, a lot of work to do, but everyone has a hand in it, and I'm just proud to be in a state of New Hampshire where, as a community, everyone's getting on board and saying, okay, how do we make it better? Let's not ever be satisfied. How do we make the system better?
Well, proud of your son. And real quickly, Governor, you still have some juice, you know, before you leave office, and we have a state website And I think what you should do right up top, and who's going to argue, just say, welcome to New Hampshire, the most veteran-friendly state in the union. What the heck? Go for it, Governor.
Oh,
right
I love
top,
it. No,
right
I love that idea. Any way we can do to keep pushing that message, that's what it's all about. Well, but also, you got to earn it. You can't say it unless you've earned it and you're providing it. And I think we're doing a great job.
Well, Governor, years ago at WMUR, I was sitting around a meeting, and we were coming up with a new marketing line. I said, why don't we just say more New Hampshire people get their news than any other source? And they go, you can't say that. I go, we are going to say it. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, guys. Be good.
Thank you, Governor.
Now it's Good Morning New Hampshire on the Pulse of an Eight. I didn't know the governor's son just went off to Paris Island to become a Marine.
That's right.
Hey, real quickly, we have a retired general, but that doesn't mean he's really retired. Don Baldock here. Scott Brown, former ambassador to New Zealand. And people don't know this about Scott Brown of Ride, New Hampshire. How many years in the colonel? Is a colonel? Colonel. And you're only 40 years old. Amazing. All right, we're going to come back with those two. We're going to talk. They have some insight on how we can do better. I'm going to give Phil a little break, and a lot more coming up. Governor Chris Christie on the way here as well. This is our Veterans Town Hall. Several of the presidential candidates weighing in. Jack Heath, Good Morning New Hampshire live from the Bank of New Hampshire stage. Thank you, Wilcone Harley-Davidson, Swim with a Mission, and Outdoor Pride. Back in a moment. I'm delighted to have the people running for office. Both of you have run for office. You've held office, U.S. Senator and General Don Baldock, the nominee in the most recent U.S. Senate race, and has run before. But we're talking military, and I'm so delighted that you both are here because you've given so much. You've done so much. Let me start in rank. General Don Baldock of originally the Lakes region, now in Stratmore, New Hampshire. I've said before, I can't even begin to calculate your family and your service to this country and state. How many deployments? I don't remember. 30 years at least. Special Forces commander. You fought for your troops on the mental health side, I think, when you served in Africa. Middle East, one of the first in there. Thank you for your service. First of all, it should be said. It really should be said. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that, Jack, and thank you so much. But I appreciate you pointing me out first, but really the ambassador has rank on me. So that's...
I don't know. Last time I checked,
you
know,
it's
like White Christmas, you know, when the general walks down the stairs before that famous scene. But seriously, how many years, General?
So a total of 36 when you combine them all up. 33 and a half are active service time.
33 and a half active. Right. How many deployments?
Started as a private. I always like to point that out, Sergeant. I think those are the most formative things you can do to become an officer. In my opinion.
How many deployments?
So I did a total of 81 months in combat of all the combat tours I did. 66 of that was in Afghanistan, and I'm credited with 10 tours in Afghanistan, and then I have three more tours in other locations of the world.
That's mind-boggling to me. You've been on my show before. You've supported every veterans initiative I've done. I'm going to bring in former Senator Scott Brown in a moment because we have the balance of the hour. Thanks to both of you being here. You've supported it all, but one thing you've been very outspoken on is we are falling down when our veterans get home, or in service even, when they're serving, on the mental health, emotional side. It's something that the brass doesn't want to talk about.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've coined the term in the military that generals have no right taking care of anybody else if they can't take care of themselves. And we are not immune to the effects of combat, particularly when you start combat as a young sergeant and you continuously go back to combat throughout your years as an officer. I'm not the only one. There's a chief warrant officer sitting in your audience today that shares the same background that I do, and there's many, many others. And so I try to use my experience and my rank to shed light on the problem that we have with our veterans, their family members, because we're forgetting the family. There's increased suicides in the families today as a result that's not even being looked at. There are studies done that show us that, yeah, it needs to be looked at and we need to take it seriously, but we're not. And you've heard a lot of people talk about the bureaucracy, systems and processes, Band-Aid legislation, and you know, veterans are the first ones to say thank you very much for the benefits that we do get. And thank you to the people at the ground level in the VAs that do the hard work.
But they're not real good for asking for a hand up. They're not real good because they always think someone else needs it more.
That's right.
Former Senator and Ambassador Scott Brown, again, 30-plus years.
39,
Wow. Well, thank you. A lot of people, no offense, they don't know that about you because you're a multifaceted person. You've done the iron, you know, the competitive stuff, the singing and all that. You've been a senator, but you've served. Where does that sense of service come from?
Well, I joined it after the blizzard of 78. I saw what our National Guardsmen did in Massachusetts, where we had people die on Route 128. And I ended up going to a football game, saw my mom's old boyfriend, who was the battalion commander at the 101st Engineer Battalion in Reading. And I said, man, you guys did a great job. I was so proud of you. He said, you should come down and say hi to the guys. Well, the next day I'm standing tall as a private as well. You know, but it's not a day that goes by, and I don't want to speak for Don, that we don't think about the men and women we served. And I miss the camaraderie. And, you know, I was listening to you on the way, and a lot of listen, I've been working on this thing like Don has forever. And one of the biggest challenges we have is when soldiers get discharged, they're not properly discharged with a thorough review, both physical and mental. They should not be discharged and out-processed until they're 100% healthy, because once they're out-processed, then really they go into the VA system, but it's so overwhelming in terms of getting through the quagmire. And I can tell you what, that there's such a backlog. As you know, President Trump considered me to be the head of the veterans, and they gave it to Shulkin, which was a big mistake, Obama holdover. And we had a plan. I had a plan to basically put on active duty, temporary orders, the guard and reserve JAGs, to get them all and get all those hundreds of thousands of claims done, so there's no backlog. Because not only are they waiting for a year plus for their care and coverages, by that time they're hopeless, they're helpless. And but not for all the groups that you've referred to throughout your show, we'd be way worse.
Right.
So there's so much we can do. One is the out-processing issue, obviously. The one-on-one, man-on-man, man-on-woman, you know, touches of basically saying, hey, what do you need? What can we do? How can we help you? And getting that backlog is just, it's abhorrent and immoral, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. General, Victor's behind us. I met Victor when you first got your service dog. Victor's an amazing animal.
That's because he puts up a Don, quite frankly,
yes,
if I may.
Yes. Well, I'm a big
just
fan.
Just like my wife.
I'm a big fan of what these animals have done for veterans I've met. And I met one Navy SEAL for the years we tried to get him a dog. And a Night Stalker, we just lost one from Gorham, but a friend of mine, Aaron White, in the North Country. We finally got him dogs, right? Took months. $30,000 we had to raise to get them a dog that matched them. I think they had to go to Quebec or Florida at the time. The COVID was going on. So we finally got it. And they both told me this dog has helped save their lives. I said, what happened before this? Well, I did 5 tours, come back, I'd get down, I'd go out in the woods and hunt. And each day, this is what Aaron told me, I came up with reasons not just to drop dead with it, you know, in the woods. I just didn't want to live anymore. The pain was too much. And the dog has saved my life. Mm-hmm. I go, what did you do before? He goes, I'd go to the VA and they'd give me medications. Did they ever talk to you? Did they ever sit with you? Did they ever get through those compartments that you've closed? He said, no, the dog has. Mm-hmm. So why, and look at what he's done for you, Victor. You've had, you know, 80-some months in combat. Why isn't the VA, why isn't this part of our care for veterans? Just canines, $25,000. We're spending billions of dollars on crap in this country sometimes, and a dog saves a life.
Dog does save a life, and the problem is that our society stigmatizes it. And, you know, I mean, I've been ridiculed for having a dog. It's been suggested that I can't do certain jobs because I have a dog. And so when the stigma is high...
How do we take that stigma out, General?
Well, we got to tell people to sit down and be quiet when they talk about it, right? We got people that talk in their little get-togethers about, oh, well, you know, he has a dog. I'm sorry. And these are very influential people.
I'd take your dog over those people any day of the week.
Well, I think most of us would. If dogs ran the world, it'd be a better place.
No, seriously. Right? I mean, but again, real quick, we're going to take a break and come back with both of you. The question, let me just ask former Senator Brown. Mm-hmm. You served in the Senate.
Oh, yeah.
Was it a priority? You were probably rare there as a veteran, but did your colleagues say in the break room, how are we doing for veterans, Senator? What do we need to pass? Did they care?
Well, Senator Kirk, Senator Graham, and I—we went over to Afghanistan on a short tour, doing our guard duty, and you know, we did a lot of work. I worked on the no contracting with the enemy bill, which basically, by day they were, you know, friends; by night they're killing us with the money they give. If we sued them, they'd sue us in federal district court. So there's so many things and so many stories. But I can tell you, I had the stolen valor bill ready to go. And I had another Democratic colleague come up to me who was in the military, very senior person. I think they named a ship after him. And I said, are we ready to go on this bill? And he goes, Harry Reid won't let you do it because you're running for re-election and we don't want to give you a victory.
Politics.
That's how petty it is.
Politics.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But there's some great
people. So politics.
Yeah, yeah. There's some great people up there. Listen, I was on armed services and veterans. And, you know, and Chris Pappas, you know, I don't agree with him on a lot. But when you do walk through that door, you know, they do a lot.
Yeah.
Veterans, number one. Well, that gets outside the committee, that's the problem.
As a media person, I can tell you when I do these forums and I ask candidates about veterans issues, mental health, how do we do better? You watch these debates. They never will say to the presidential or state candidates, they never talk about this. It's always, you know, it's either not sexy enough or, you know, it just doesn't matter. General Bulldog, you were just introducing us to, I guess he's retired. A lot of years.
We never retired.
In the Navy SEALs. He's just moved here. I think that's cool. His first name is Wayne. Right. I just asked him why he moved here. I just say, hey, you know, like the cooler temperatures, family from Connecticut. And then he got to meet Phil Taub. And I think we just did this network of letting people know we're a good state to live in. And I see that whenever we raise awareness. But let me just stay on the mission. And thank you for your service, Wayne, in the SEALs. General and Scott Brown, and people, again, he's got one of these resumes that, you know, maybe one of these things would be good enough, but former ambassador to New Zealand, U.S. Senator, and you ran, of course, and, of course, General
Donald. You know what the best one is? It's grandfather.
I know.
That's the best one.
You and I were talking about that, right? Changes everything, right?
Yeah, I agree with that one.
Big time.
And Don Bolduc, of course, originally Laconia?
Yes.
The Bulldog Farm?
Yeah.
I think I still have a thing of maple syrup in the fridge.
Yeah,
from
there
that.
You go.
Hey, real quick, though, where do we go from here? 2024, the main goal of this forum is, as we have these presidential stuff, the primaries coming up January 23rd. How do we elevate veterans care, veterans discussions, veterans issues in Washington and around the country? How do we get more people, including the media, but the people in Congress, the presidential candidates, to say, okay, I did serve or I didn't serve, but I could just do the numbers. Less than 1% serve. I may not be the slowest or fastest boat on the river, but I'll tell you one thing. We have two wars going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know about what that is, General Scott Brown. You know this. You have a nephew who's a fighter pilot. There's not enough people in the military, let alone recruitment, joining. Why should they join if we're not going to take better care of them afterwards?
Well, that's absolutely right. And so you want to make a difference? Well, we got to mobilize our veterans. This hall should be packed with veterans. It should be packed. I get it that it's in the middle of the day, but we have a lot of retired veterans here. And they should all be sitting in these seats. There should be overflow in here.
But you know the problem, General?
Activating the veteran base in this state.
Well, how do we do that?
Huge.
But you know what? I'll tell you purposely, we didn't over-invite today because I've never been in this venue. And I'm a little bit of a perfectionist on what I do. And I'd never seen how beautiful this facility was, which is my problem, my fault. Now I want to do the show out of here a lot. So I didn't know if we're going to have any glitches, and I'd never been here before, the sound system. So now we can. But when I do, like, veterans count, and you've supported me on that, veterans will say to me, we've been doing it 10 years, talking about veterans count, part of Easter SEALs.
Right.
And I'll meet some veteran, they'll come up and say, I've never heard of it.
Right.
How do we connect the veterans in the state? How do we get them? How do we get a network so we know who they are, where they are?
Well,
they may
gotta,
not want to come, but how do we do it?
We got to mobilize our one television station to start being veteran-focused. We got to connect all our radio stations to have a common message and connect them so everybody hears it. We got to get out there in print. We got to get out there in social media. But if we keep – the second point is if we keep sending – the same people to Washington, D.C., and expect some sort of change, then, you know, we're basically borderline on the definition of insanity. It's not changing. And the Huffington Post today just published a report saying that this Congress that was just voted in a year ago, is the most ineffective Congress since the Great Depression. Now, how are you going to get focus on veteran issues when they are the most ineffective? 21 bills they addressed, and they weren't even bills that addressed the serious problems of this nation, never mind the VA. And so we have a huge, huge problem here. And my last point is going to be, hey, I drive around this state and I see this issue is on the ballot, that issue is on the ballot. You never see a sign that says veteran care is on the ballot. And we got to hold, when they say, I want to do this and I want to do that, oh yeah, well, how in God's name are you going to do that as one person? You need a collaborative effort. And how are you going to collaborate inside both houses in order to be able to get these things done? Because you can't do it on your own.
I think you hit upon a point, Scott Brown, that the public also needs to wake up. And I think the difference is, and you're a good example, I mean this sincerely, because the general is full-time and you were doing 3 decades of Guard service coming and going, but you've been in the public side. I think, I may be wrong, that some people look to people like, you know, the people who serve, and they say, you know what, they chose to do that. They signed up for that. They wanted to do that, and they're always going to be there. I don't want to do that. I'm going to take care of myself. Let them. They wanted it. And so when they get out, they're on their own. They signed up for this. Mm-hmm. And what I don't think they realize, the people who don't serve, is what the spouses do, what the kids do on Christmas or New Year's or a birthday or a bad day at school after a bad practice when dad or mom's not there, what the person and that family sacrifice. I don't think people understand what it means.
Some do, Jack. Some do. And,
but not enough.
And
how do we get more people to give it to
you? General, I, and anyone who served, Wayne, we have incredible stories. I worked at the Pentagon the last 4 years of my military service as the deputy legal counsel to one of the Joint Chiefs. And the work we did on suicide, immobilizations, family issues. Yeah, listen, whenever anyone's deployed, who does the shoveling and the snow plowing? Who does the babysitting? There's a big void, and there are a lot of groups throughout the state, whether it's pretty much any state, that try to help out. But it's never enough. And is there any easy answer? Of course not. There's not an easy answer. And are there some people that are anti-military? Well, you see it every day.
Yeah. Especially some Ivy League colleges.
Yeah. Listen, I battled with the president of Harvard because they didn't allow ROTC on the campus. And I battled tooth and nail. Finally, they have them, but they got to, you know, it's still a big mess. Yeah, it's you got to hide. I know that we're proud that we serve. We are thankful for anyone. I had somebody come up. I was in Vietnam for a year. I'm like, okay. Or I had a guardsman say, you know, I only did 3 years. Yeah. I did it for a couple of weeks and I got hurt. Yeah. Congratulations. Cause you do more, right, General, than like 99.5% of the people in the country. Yeah. Listen, it's a choice. And yes, people make that choice. I am a patriot. General's a patriot. You're a patriot. Everyone listening, I hope, is a patriot. And we have to continue, as the general said, mobilizing the forces. I said, how come there's not more veterans here? He's right. And I get it. I'm hoping to have my rock band play here, and then we'll have
I'd love to.
How about Veterans for Rock?
Well,
rock for Veterans.
How
about that?
Yeah.
I'll do it in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting because the public, I was reading one place, how much time people will spend when they want to get a new one of these. They'll spend hours researching a cell phone plan, but they don't even think, hey, we're free. I can criticize the President of the United States or Donald Trump on social media, and unlike China or Moscow, I'm not going to be jailed that night.
Right.
I can go whatever church or synagogue or religion, whatever I want to worship. I have all these freedoms. And I really think people under the age of 40 or 50 in this country, I don't think a lot of college kids honestly know who bombed Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. I don't think they know what the word Auschwitz means. Mm-hmm. I don't think they ever heard of Winston Churchill, and they're studying history in college. So I'm worried. And part of me weeps for the future that more younger people don't understand how we got from here to there. That's why it pisses me off what I'm seeing on college campuses. That's why the Israelis flag is over your shoulder, because mm-hmm. I know what happened in World War II. I've been to the Holocaust Museum.
Mm-hmm. I've been to Israel a couple of times.
And I understand what's happening over there.
Right.
And I understand Gaza was using that. I mean, the Hamas was using that hospital. And they there was a ceasefire, by the way, in Gaza before October 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Hamas started that war. They knew what they were doing, and they're the ones responsible for what's happening with Palestinians, in my humble opinion. But my point is, how do we get freedom? How do we get more people to understand freedom is like your health? Until you don't have it, it matters a lot.
Well, this is another point that I wanted to make, and I'm glad that you led us down that road, and that is that the abandonment of the values and principles of America has been significant over the last 60 years, and it's come to roost.
I agree with you.
today. It's come to roost. In large part is because our communities aren't as patriotic as they should be.
Right.
We have less and less people serving. We have less and less representation from top to bottom in our military like we used to have. The days of Jack Kennedy and the Bushes and Nixon and Ford and all these guys that took it as a responsibility to serve their nation. And these guys at the highest level of our society. Well, that brought buy-in to the military. That brought buy-in. When the President of the United States can say, I served and I was on a PT boat and I got injured, that brings America together. When the soldier at the bottom of the economic system signs up or gets drafted, he knows that he's going to get support. I have visited every town and city in this state, and I heard more often than I cared to hear from moms and dads and grandfathers who had served, who had lineages of service in their family, that they're afraid to recommend to their children to go into the military because how poorly it's being led.
Scott,
it's a leadership issue.
Would you recommend? You might, but you're different. The general, you're different. Would you recommend to a kid or a nephew to become a New Hampshire State Trooper? I would.
Yeah, of course. My nephew's I was telling the general, my nephew's a Burlington police officer. So yeah, we're law enforcement, DEA. You know,
there
police.
Are 80 openings in the New Hampshire State.
I know.
80. Yeah,
well,
80.
Let me just say that Patrolman Don Bulldog here. Did you know that he's
Hampton?
Pittsburgh. No, he's a.
I just graduated from the full-time academy.
He's a full-time police officer now. In Pittsfield,
right down the road.
You
here.
Should really do something with your wife.
I'm kidding. I'm a patrolman.
So
unbelievable.
He's legit.
No, my point is though, I just think that we take things for granted.
Yes.
It's like your health. Until you get that bad X-ray, you don't think about it. Freedom. I mean, imagine being that Wall Street Journal reporter in Moscow. Mm-hmm. Isn't he still locked up?
It's being chipped away at our freedoms, our rights
Jack,
and freedoms.
Jack, let me tell you. Just as a brigadier general, when I get told I'm a warmonger and a killer of children and women by people of my own state, that's a problem. When I get told that, when I lose an election because I am values principle based to this great nation, and I'm told that those are bad things and that I'm an enemy of my country, that resonates with people. And people say, well, if they do that to him, what the hell are they going to do to me? So what did I have to do? I don't know how many times I need to volunteer to get punched in the face. But at the end of the day, I'm now a patrolman.
Well, thank you for your service.
You know what I'm saying?
No, so I get it. But
we're
again,
doing our job. We're coming out and saying, hey.
But we're talking 330 million people, 1.3 million people, and less than 1%. Real quickly, we're going to go to a break. I want to thank you both very, very much.
It's been great.
Governor Chris Christie's coming up. I just have to say this. I live in, I guess I'll say it. I don't like to say it where I live, but I live in Portsmouth. I love the history there. I love walking around Strawberry Bank and seeing the houses from 1609. You can feel the history, right? And you go down some streets, and I see more flags for other countries than I do American flags.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've not seen in Portsmouth, you know one reason why the people are moving there from Connecticut, New Jersey, and New York? It's safe. Who keeps it safe? A great police department in Portsmouth. I don't see one blue anything thank you to our firefighters, EMT police, an American flag. I see all other kind of flags, and that's great. But why are people almost ashamed to put up a flag in front of their home, an American flag?
Well, you can come to my house. We got them there. So.
I know you do.
Well, I'll tell you why. I have it on my
I've walked by your
flag
house. I've seen it. You got
American flag, MIAPOW flag, and the Don't Tread on
All
Me
right.
flag. And, Jack, the reason being is people are afraid to be ridiculed in this particular environment that we're in. Where patriotism is now looked at as extremism.
Until you take
that. We've got to change that narrative.
Take that freedom away. And as I say on my morning show, I had the good fortune of being a civilian and going to the Army War College National Security Seminar. And General Abrams, like yourself, I'd get along with him in the breakouts. And I'd say, who's our number one enemy? You say China, without
mm-hmm.
question.
Without question.
And they'll wait 1,000 years to take it away. Yeah. And I go, not North Korea. He goes, not Moscow. He goes, wait, you see how bad their military. China. So until freedom is taken away, I honestly wonder and worry. But, hey, thank you both very much for your service.
Thank
all
you.
Right,
happy
Thanksgiving
for all you
do.
God bless you. And thank everybody out here. Appreciate it.
We're going to take back. Phil Thompson back up. We're going to have the governor, Christie, is here live, and he's going to be joining us, presidential candidate, our Veterans Town Hall 2024 forum, brought to you by Laconia Harley-Davidson, Swim of the Mission, and Outdoor Pride. Jack Heath back in New Hampshire stage back in a moment.